Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to everyone who has become a regular listener. I hope we are keeping you entertained and surprised. Thanks also to anyone listening for the first time. You are not alone. The audience is growing steadily. Thanks for the support. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. These podcasts will tackle many different topics. So if there is an issue you think we should pursue, if there's something happening out there in the industry that's worth discussing, or if you've got questions and comments on what we've already covered, please let us know. Contact details are on the Audio Boom page where every episode is available. Take the afternoon off, listen to loads of them. You can have a great time. This episode is another in an irregular series we do exploring the role of the CISO. And we have two of the best in the business to do that exploring. We'll cover the expectations around the role, how it is changing, and what it takes to be a good leader. That's a lot to cover in 20, 25 minutes, but we'll give it a go. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and I've spent quite a bit of time while here researching this role, though, to be honest, I think my understanding is rather theoretical because I've talked to CISOs rather than done it for myself. But here to put me right and tell me what life is like for a real-life CISO is a real-life CISO. Ralph Benton, who is both Chief Security Officer and Chief Information Security Officer at Nordic Media Group Schibsted. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, Mark.
Great to have you here. I just wondering, are you the first to combine those two roles at Schibsted, or is it something you inherited? Or I'm just curious about what to expect.
I'm the first, actually. And the story behind it is really we've been working with cybersecurity for a couple of years since I joined back in 2019. And we identified that naturally security and physical security and cybersecurity is very related. And then the Ukraine war started with the invasion of Russia. And we started sending journalists on assignments to the conflict area, right? And it became very clear that, okay, they bring computers with them, but they also need to have sort of the risk assessment from a personal security point of view. And that's why I sort of linked together. And I got it, the responsibility to coordinate that.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But I guess it's emphasizes as well just how important all this stuff is, because there's literally lives at stake there, aren't there, for you guys? I mean,
correct.
Yeah. Also, here is Paul Watts, a distinguished analyst at the ISF and a former CISO, and he was very much on the front line when doing that role. Hello, Paul.
Hello, great to be here again. And a very different front line from the one that Ralph discussed, although, on the subject of the front line, I feel like we're under a bit of pressure here to get this one in the can, Mark, because I think we're all that stands between Ralph, a motorbike, the open countryside, and the Swedish midsummer break. So, no pressure. We've got our work cut out here, I think.
Yep, he'll probably talk very fast, I think, be out of the building before we can, before we're done. Paul, I just wondered about your early view of security. I don't know if your first job was in your first starting point in your career. Was there a CISO? Did you have a view of that person? I'm just curious if before you jumped into security, what your feelings were then?
It's an interesting one. So the role I did before my first security leadership gig, there was no security function. There was no security leader. If you fast forward to 2023, that organization is now an ISF member and they have a flourishing security team. And I think that's quite typical of the journey a lot of organizations have come on, to be honest with you. My first security leadership role was in financial services. I think that was one of the first sectors to really, jump on the bandwagon. But I always described them as doing security to the business because it was all about complying with regulations. And, Ralph, I'm sure you'll agree with this. You work with Schibsted now. We have to do security with our organizations. Otherwise, we're just an annoying bureaucrat that's getting in the way of innovation and doing cool things and making lots of money, right?
Correct. I fully agree with you. And I have a similar experience, I would say. I always refer to when I started back in, was it early 2000 in security, that it was a lot about guerrilla warfare almost, right? Getting the business to understand why this is important and so on. And today, I think a company without a CISO role or defined CISO role it's hard to find. But basically, today, information security is on everyone's mind. And But you're absolutely right, Paul. I mean, if you don't do it from the business aspect and only from the compliance aspect, you will, in my view, you will probably fail.
Yeah, agreed. 100% agree.
Yeah, well, I think, Paul, you did some work recently on to that security as a business opportunity and just, you know, demonstrating that value to the organization. But I just wonder why, I guess, I don't know, your experience, were you ever taught that, or was it something you have to learn? I was just curious about that as a sort of, because I know when we talked to Patrick Bersteak, he said the same, just it's not the type of thing that's in some of the courses, and if you have qualifications, you know, there's letters after your name, you may not have that much experience. You may not have been taught how to do some of this, these important things.
Well, I think it's a whole conversation in itself. And funnily enough, I was speaking at a conference yesterday about this, and I trained my guns on academia and you know, some of those more learning routes into our industry where the students are being taught the tradecraft and the technicalities of security, but they're not being taught the broader business facing and softer skills that are required to bring that to life. You know, like back to Ralph's point, you know, we've got to be seen to be unlocking value for our businesses. And if all we're doing is looking at it through a technical lens, or we're talking in a language that completely bamboozles the business, then, you know, we're never going to make friends and influence people. And, you know, I always bring it back to value. You know, regulatory compliance it's an indirect form of value, but it's not the sort of value that motivates people to listen to what it is we have to say. Then in answer to your first point, you know, I always talk about value being a composition of knowledge plus experience. So you can't walk out, you know, into your first job and immediately become an effective security leader. I think you've got to pick up some battle scars, for want of a better expression, and kind of understand what works and what doesn't work, and think about that in the context of the business before you can really kind of earn your stripes as a solid security leader. And kind of just on that, you know, Ralph, we've talked many times, and you know, I heard you talk at our Nordic Spring Conference about, you know, your first security transformation program with Schibsted. I mean, I wonder how you first pitched that idea that transformation was important to the organization. You know, I mean, because I think that's a good case study. How did you sell your vision to unlock that value for the business?
Yeah, so luckily for me, I had a board and a top management who understood the need for cybersecurity and the risks of not focusing on this. Right? That's why they brought me in. So by that, I already had the top management engagement. I think that's crucial if you want to do this transformation as we have done. Right? But then, as you say, Paul, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that when you go down in the hierarchy, the people in the business say, okay, the boards want this, but does that comply with everything else that the boards want them to do, right? So you need to have a good story. And you need to sort of have, in my case, we choose a framework to try to use a language that everyone can understand. In our case, we didn't use the ISF framework for it, but we used the NIST framework. After that, became a member of ISF. But we used the NIST cybersecurity framework to assess where we were and where we need to go, where we want to be, or where the boards want us to be in the line of the risk appetite from cyber risk perspective. And then we had this direct dialogue with the business, and we have done this transformation, we have done the program now, and we actually had an external assessment on our posture today compared to back then. And they interviewed a lot of the business. And one thing that really, really made me happy was the business said, like, we now understand what is expected from us. We also understand that it is our responsibility, and we need to work together with the central team to make this happen. It will not happen by the central team. It's our responsibility. So I think you need to have a very, very good dialogue and trying to get the business to understand why this is important. But you also have to be very, very, very humble to the fact that that they have also other requirements, and you need to listen to them and understand that this is a prioritization, just like everything else, and you need to find a way. So I can go on forever for this, but you're absolutely right, Paul. It's crucial that you just not get the board and the top management to support, but you also need to be going into the business and explaining why are we doing this, and also opening up doors for the fact that to get this right, you need to be involved, and we need to be together.
Yeah, because I had a look at Schibsted as a organization, and it's a very diverse group of companies, and it's like 50 odd brands there. So was it, when you say dialogue, have you literally been on the road most of the time?
Just
knocking on doors and talking to people and being a bit of a salesman?
I look at myself as a salesman a lot, actually. I spend a lot of time. I have one-on-ones with people from all over the business. Actually, the CIO, the former CIO in our company said, I want to have the same engagement as you have with stakeholders, because I had one-on-one 25 minutes every month with different people in the business that are our key stakeholder identified as that. And it's a very open discussion, like, where are you? Where do you want? How can we help you? Where are we? The roadmap. It's really, really interesting. So it's a lot of sales pitching, I'll say.
I think you make a really, really interesting point there. And I say this to a lot of people, including a couple of, new enrolled security leaders that I have the privilege of mentoring, is the role of being a marketeer is something that they don't teach you in CISO school, but I find more and more now it's an important string to your bow that you've got to be able to market the proposition in the way that the customer wants. I was asked a long time ago about kind of advice to my former self, three things that I would I would say to myself if I was starting again, and there are a couple there that are quite relevant. And the first one is, however we feel the importance of cybersecurity is, we have to start from the point of recognition that we are not the most important person in the room. So going in there with a real, dictatorial pitch, that doesn't win you hearts and minds. The second one is this whole marketing thing, which is, if you consider the suite of cybersecurity capabilities, people, process, and technology that we do, and think about the employer as the customer, you need to be in a situation where you're compelling the customer to want the product rather than the customer feeling that they have to buy it through fear, uncertainty, doubt, and regulation. And the way that you do that is you market it to you play to their strengths. You talk about it in language that they understand, and you take the time to learn about them, and then you offer a solution that solves their problems. And then the final thing I would say is just a little bit of humility, because as much as we like to think we're great, and of course we are, we don't know everything, and we certainly don't know the intricacies of how our businesses work. So, demonstrating that you're interested and keen to learn, that's a great leveler, and it's a great start point to then market your wares to your employer. So, that was my view. I think that's a really, really interesting point that you make there, Ralph.
Yeah, I think because we had that, again, that conversation with Patrick Besteg, that he was saying that, in his early days, he was very much that, I know everything, I can tell you how to do this, and this will make everything better. And people were like, yeah, of course it will. And that didn't go down well, strangely enough.
we all did it. You walk into the boardroom with a spreadsheet full of answers to questions that they'd not even asked, and we'd say, you'd basically come in and going, look, you're all stupid, you're all idiots, you don't know technology, I do, shut up and listen to me. That's not the best way to win over a board. And you learn the hard way, right? We've all been battered and bruised, and you've done your pitch, and you've dropped your mic at the end of slide 50 on your PowerPoint deck, and the chair of the board looked up at you and said, Paul or Ralph, that was an amazing presentation, but so what? And that's one of the things that we've really reflected on with Threat Horizon, and that's why Mark's leading a charge on repositioning that, so that we talk about the outputs in terms of business context. It's not just about the technicalities of security, it's about the implications of those on what the business is trying to do. So, even we're recognizing that some of our products need to adapt to meet the changing needs of our businesses as well.
Yeah. And I guess, Ralph, those one-on-ones you have, they're not just you talking, they're you listening as well, because you're understanding about the business.
Yeah, that's part of it too. So basically, my recommendation, if somebody wants to try this out, or I think you should, is just go there. Don't, I think we always try to come with the solution, right? Go and meet them. Don't put an agenda where you have a 40 slides presentation with solving everything, because that will not go down well, as Paul just said, right? Just go there and have an open agenda. What's bothering you right now? Let's talk about what's bothering you and your business. That's the, I think I have two standard bullets. We talk about the risks, and we have a risk log that they update, and we talk about that. And then we have like any other topics, basically. But as a CISO and some people I've been working with, we tend to sort of want to have the solution before we go and meet. And that's where I think we go a little bit wrong, because we then close the door for an open discussion and getting to know the business, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of knowing how they do what they do and how you can help them do that. I mean, that's presumably the point. Yeah.
Jill, I'm smiling at the moment because I've now got this mental image of Ralph Benton with a bulletproof flak jacket on with the word press on it, the front line in a Russia-Ukraine confrontation, trying to talk to a journalist about, so do you know the importance of regularly changing your passwords? Is that, the missiles flying overhead? I shouldn't make light of what's a dire situation, but
yeah. But imagine
there's probably a time and place to have those sorts of conversations, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's probably not one of them.
No. But I would, Ralph, are journalists difficult people to convince to do the right things? Because having worked in the media, there were some real prima donnas. There were some difficult people there. Like TV people will never open the door for you. They'll slam it in your face.
Yeah. But, I mean, the word prima donna, I understand what you were coming with there, but we need to look at it from another side. Like, okay, if you put yourself in their shoes, right? They are personally responsible for the sources, to protect the sources. And this is where I go a little bit wrong. We had this discussion on the panel debate in the ISF Congress. Paul, you were facilitating that. And this is a challenge, right? You have to understand that each individual journalist are responsible for protecting their sources, right? By that, they need to be sort of skeptical to any monitoring or security tool on their devices, etc., because that could be a potential attack vector for a data breach of their resource or the source protection, right? So
yeah,
basically you need to talk to them. But yes, I agree that they tend to be, it's hard to convince them that security is actually securing them, right? that's a challenge. Okay. But because they also had the other side, like, okay, but you could use it to monitor me and my work, right? Couldn't you? Basically, potentially, yes, but that's not the purpose. So you sort of end up in this discussion. But I think we have had a great dialogue in CHIPS that on this topic. We have had some really, really interesting discussion on this, of course, but the output of it is so good because you build the trust. And there is, as I said, like a potential risk there or a theoretical risk. But just understanding that there is a theoretical risk that we basically need to accept is important. And that's how you build the trust. And I'm not saying that every journalist in Schibsted Media House fully trust me and my team, but we are getting there because we understand that we work together. So it's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that dialogue, again, it's sort of one of those, there are sort of defining characteristics of, you know, good CISOs is that dialogue and that just that understanding as well. I think you're really interesting about your point about, well, yeah, I could use it to monitor you, but also it can be used to protect your sources. I mean, that's the way to, that's, yeah, clearly a really, really big part of this. But it you know, for both of you, do you feel like it's, as a CISO, this job of convincing the business is getting easier? Do they understand? I mean, I guess they understand the importance, but I just wonder if they give you more time yet.
Or I mean, still... I've not practiced for a while because I'm enjoying a career with the ISF now. But what I would say is, if I think about my last gig and the one before that, I think the board is starting to get it. I think they're very easily distracted, and I have every empathy with boards that are trying to balance inflationary pressures, financial pressures, geopolitical issues, very competitive landscape, difficult to retain staff. You know, there's a lot of conflicting priorities, and we have to recognize how difficult it is to manage a private organization, and how even more difficult it is to manage a public one. But they do recognize that cybersecurity is important. They are giving us the opportunity to talk to them. They are accepting that, you know, they need our help. And I think we have more of a humility about how we approach it. And I think that's building the relationships. What I would say is, as you go deeper and deeper into the organization, that collective acknowledgement and responsibility starts to dilute. And I still don't think we are where we need to be at skip level, hoping that that phrase translates well. But in the, you know, the right at the coalface of the organization, we still have a lot to do. And I'm very curious as to, and to the evolution of the business information security officer and security champions that are allowing the operating model for security to fragment into the business and make security more accessible to the nether regions of business. And I think that change in operating model strategy is the thing that will finally get us into a better place. And, you know, shameless plug, I'm going to be doing a bit of work on this in the leadership and strategy track this year with the ISF. I'm going to be looking at the emergent role of the business information security officer, because I do want to explore that hypothesis in a bit more detail, but also talking about the divergence of the CISO role, because I think there are now multiple types of CISO. And depending on who you are, what you are, and why you are, you may need more than one incumbent possessing a certain set of leadership skills to drive the agenda forward. But look, as I say, you know, Ralph is out there right now doing this. So, you know, Ralph, love to hear your thoughts on that. You know, are we on the same page here, or are you seeing slightly different things?
No, I fully agree. And coming back to my earlier statement, looking back at the early 2000s when I started, I was referring to guerrilla warfare, basically, because the board and the top management did not have this on the agenda in the same way. So to get things going, you really had to work with the business and taking the opportunities. And we always say, like, you should never miss an incident, because that's the window of opportunity to highlight, right? Today, we have incidents all over the place, every day and so on. You don't need that kind of driver anymore. I feed the top management. But as you say, when you trickle down, you skip the levels, right? That's where you have the issues, because then the balancing for the middle manager level on prioritizations and stuff, that's where you have still the discussion going on. So,
yeah,
and I think this is where the CISO get a little bit squashed, I would say, that you go to the board, the top management, and they say, oh, yes, Ralph, absolutely. This, we need to do that. Make it happen. And you get a program like I had. And you run this program, and you go down to the business, and they say, yes, we, of course, we will support this and so on. But by the end of the day, when it comes to rolling out stuff and appointing people, you were talking about the BISO role. I think this is really interesting. I see in my organization, by creating a culture through this transformation program, we are talking about different business areas setting up security champion programs. Right, and I think that's in line with the BISO roles. I think probably it could become a BISO role in those on. But in general, I think it's very important that we get the stuff together and get the right people involved, and by that sort of addressing the CISO role with the management team support, but also getting the business understanding it. So I think today the situation is completely different 20 years later. It's one to, as I said, we don't need to take the incident window opportunity anymore, because there's so many incidents, so they know about this. We rather need to start measuring better, and by that automatically sort of having everything in scope for the top management and the business.
I know I've asked you this question before, Ralph, and I apologize, but you give a good answer. So I'm going to ask it again, because I think it is important. I think a lot of the mistakes that some of us made back in the earlier years is that we treated cybersecurity transformation as a very linear program of work with a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm obviously a huge admirer of the story that you told us recently of the first 3 years of your transformation program in Schibsted. How do we... How do we make sure that we are really clear with our businesses that this is a cyclical process? There isn't a point where we go, do you know what? Ralph Benton's left the room, drops his mic and walks off into the sunset with his helmet under his arm, rides off into the distance. How do we remind the business that this never ends? And, you know, we're going to be back again and again and again as things change and circumstances change.
Well, shouldn't that sort of emerge? Because if you're getting that culture fixed, then it sort of rises up from the ground and ideally people are doing the right kinds of things.
Yeah, but I think it is a very good question because when we closed our program back in March this year, after 3 years, quite a few people were concerned on many levels, I would say. Like, okay, what will happen with the cybersecurity or the security awareness that the momentum we have created, what will happen with that? Will it die? I said, like, yeah, I hope not. Otherwise, this has been pretty bad investment. But how do you as a CISO, that's back to your question. Our approach is, I've been looking at, okay, how do we run our day-to-day central organization? We set up services. So I explained to my team that every security capability that we have now built and rolled out needs to become a service. And not just become a service, we need to work with a service strategy. We need to have a plan for each and one individual service to be able to explain the business. Okay, so this area will, in our view, it will develop in this area. We will need further investment because we see these threats and so on. So having a direct dialogue, not as a like a whole program approach, but actually service by service. And that's a completely mindset change, I would say, for my central team, which has been a challenge, I must admit. But I do believe that's the only way to make this fly, because one option was to let's run the cybersecurity program 2.0, but that's sort of just a never-ending story, as you say. We need to sometimes say, okay, we got to this level, now we need to make this something that is a day-to-day operation, just like any other service.
And then along comes something like Log4j, and you say, well, this is cybersecurity program version 2, service pack 1, because we've now got to kind of go off and fix this emergency and then come. Yeah, I don't think living the program through version numbers is probably a good look.
No.
I completely agree.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, it is that, because you were doing some work on governance last year, and it's that whole organization eventually needs to, and when you're operating at those higher levels, they need to understand. But equally, it's not an understanding in the sense of, yes, you know, they can write it down, but just it's what they do as well. But interesting, you're doing that as a service. Yeah, it's a joke. Yeah, smart way to think about it, isn't it? Because that's what you were doing for the organization. Yeah, very much. Yeah. But just, I want to wrap up with, picking up on something that Paul mentioned earlier, CISO school. That sounds a great place. Presumably Hogwarts, but with mice instead of owls. I don't know. But I just want, if just final questions at CISO school, what should they be teaching? Tricky question.
I think I've already kind of answered the question. I think they should be teaching the core. I see it as very stratified. So the fundamental basics of context is important. Why are we here? The technicalities of the tradecraft are obviously important so that you can drive back that consistency. You then need to be empowered with the softer skills to develop the curious mindset, the ability to communicate, the ability to articulate, consideration of finances and strategy and all of those wonderful things. And then you need to do your year out in industry, metaphorically speaking, so you can start to seed that experience. And as I tell everybody who works in this industry, your value is a compound of knowledge plus experience with a little bit of certifications to the side. And maybe, Mark, that's a conversation for another day, the role of certifications in this. But I can't imagine that CISO school would be any. I mean, What would the CISO equivalent of Quidditch be? I mean, let's leave that one out there for the listeners.
You know,
drop us an email at the Information Security Forum and tell us what would your vision of Hogwarts for CISOs look like, and what would the Quidditch game look like? That's a vision that I'm going to really struggle to get rid of the rest of the day, Mark. So thanks for that.
Yeah, but presumably most of it is defense against the dark arts, isn't it? I mean, it's all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, Ralph, and for your CISO school, what should they be teaching?
I think Paul is absolutely right. But I think the important, I always say to people working in this industry and sort of maybe aiming for becoming a CISO, is that you need to understand that you need to be very broad. You need to have the technical understanding. You need to have also the business part of it. And this is, I think, and also the financial, all those kind of stuff. And I look at me and my role as we have talked about a transformation manager, right? I need to make a change, and what kind of skills do we need to have to do that? But as I said, eventually that transformation has come. Then you need to become the day-to-day manager and making sure that it's maintained and you have a process for going forward and develop and so on. So basically, you need to cover a lot, but people need to understand that you need to have this broad aspect and that you will not be alone. You will have people, maybe not in your own organization that you are managing, but there will be people out there. You need to build a community and you need to work with the community. And that's different skills than you learn in the university, to be honest. To work in a community, that's something you learn, as you say, the experience working with people to achieve something, right?
Yeah, I think there's one thing that I should add, Mark, if I may. And I was pulled up on this yesterday, actually, at InfoSec. The academic route into our industry is not the only route. So, I would, if there are people out there who have aspirations of becoming the next generation of security leaders, and actually, they don't favor the academic route, there is absolutely no reason why you can't have that ambition through apprenticeships, through developing on the job. You know, some of the best CISOs I know are non-technical people who earn their stripes by working hard and working their way through the industry and picking up that experience and knowledge as they go. So, CISO school isn't the only route. I wouldn't want us to sound in any way elitist. There are many routes to getting into this line of work, and I would and we need everybody. We need such a diversity of skills and talent that I would never turn anybody away from working in cybersecurity. And I would say this to anybody out there. If you still don't think you understand how you could get into this industry, you pick up the phone and let's have a conversation, because there is absolutely a way in, and we will, we can help you
find. I can actually share my personal experience. I'm a teacher. I'm supposed to teach maths and music for school, right? That's what I'm supposed to do. But since 2002, I've been working in this, and since 2013, I have had a similar CISO role in different organizations. So, coming back to what we talked about today, how you meet business and talk to business, I think being a teacher or a trained teacher has been very helpful. But it doesn't take away that during these years, I have managed to learn a lot of the necessary things that you need to understand, right? Technical stuff and so on. But basically, I'm a teacher, and I see other people in our industry that actually have different backgrounds. I fully agree with you, Paul. Just having a university, a CISO university or whatever, a CISO school would probably not be too good. We need to have the diversity with people from coming in from different angles.
That probably explains why every time I see Ralph in one of our business meetings, he sets me homework.
Who knew? Definitely. Yeah, and I think it's a school of hard knocks as well. I think people, it is definitely some, need to put in some hard yards, I think, as well. But equally, I think that diversity is its strength, isn't it? Because you just cannot take people for granted when you meet them in a CISO, and that's makes it a very, very fertile and fabulous industry to be in. Because I remember a lot of interviews I do with people, and you assume that they did just do computer science and they just do, sat behind a keyboard, and then you find out, no, there's so much more. And I say that's what makes them good CISOs.
Creatives. It's the one thing, for the most part, we come from a technical background, and that is really starting to hurt us now. So we need more ALFs. We need more people from arts, humanities, internal communications. The way to pivot into cybersecurity, it's very complicated. It's not very clear. As an industry, we need to do a better job. And again, it comes back to marketing, right? We need to do a better job of marketing how you can take what you consider an obscure skill and turn it into a vitally important skill for our industry. We want anybody and everybody to come and work in cybersecurity. So if you think you can't, you're wrong. Come and talk to people who have been there and we can show you how to get into this industry.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Ralph. Many thanks for your time and your comments. Thanks for listening as well. Tell your friends. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. If you look at the Audio Boom page, that's where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. You'd want to. The podcasts are also available on securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.